for a Bible sermon from the pulpit of Harpeth Baptist Church in Kingston Springs, Tennessee. We hope this message will help you in your daily walk with the Lord. Now, let's listen as Pastor Chance Strickland brings a message from the series, Life Lessons from Nehemiah.
Go and see. We saw in chapter 1, Nehemiah becoming burdened over the bad news from Jerusalem. Here in chapter 2, we read of Nehemiah beginning the work to do something about the situation that troubled him so much. He decided to go and see. He is planning to be accountable for doing all that he can to help with or to fix the situation, which is an admirable trait in someone. You may not completely fix something, or you may not have all the answers, but you can do what you can do, right? That's the way to be, too. A lot of times it's discouraging when we feel like we can't do it all, and we decide just to do nothing. But it's better to do what you can do than to do nothing, in my opinion. He decides not to just think about the problem and what he could do. Rather, his plan is to, this is our familiar term for it now, is to kind of own the situation and to do something, to take ownership. That's something else we don't want. I don't mind helping, but I don't want the responsibility. That's popular in our culture these days as well. If we stop with Nehemiah in chapter 1, we would only ever see Nehemiah as a man of vision. He had a burden, he prayed, he mourned, he fasted, he wept. And that's good. Vision is essential, but planning is also essential. If you only ever have vision, well then you'll only ever have vision. But if you take your vision and add in some planning, well then your vision will turn into substance. And that's what we need to do for our God. Here in this chapter, chapter 2 tonight as we read, we see Nehemiah take his burden from an idea to a carefully drawn up plan with all his bases covered. He doesn't just go and see on a wish and a prayer. We're not to do that as Christians in this day at all. We're not to do things without planning and preparation. The Bible clearly tells us to count the cost, to plan things out, to be good stewards of what it is that we're going to deal with. So he carefully decides how and when to go and see. And a crucial life lesson can be learned here tonight as we observe Nehemiah's actions. Before he goes, he plans. And that's the first thing we want to talk about tonight, is planning. To be effective in the work he hoped to do, Nehemiah would need to plan. Too many times, the term, what might have been, becomes the acceptable report when Christians set out on what we feel we should do. We do what we can without a good plan, without a good process. We say this would be good, and we jump right in. We're very zealous about it, and we look back later and say, well, we could have done this, or we could have done that, or we should have done that. And that becomes sort of our motto as Christians a lot of times. And I don't mean to, I know I'm discouraging some of you. You're looking at me funny right now. It gets better from here, I promise. But if we're not careful, that becomes acceptable. To just do things on a whim, to just do things without a plan, and then look back and say, yeah, we might have should have done that, but it's over now, and we got it done, and now we can go home and rest. But there, if you just do a little planning up front, that doesn't have to become your motto in life or what you're trying to do for God. Without adequate planning, the task, no matter how great your vision or your burden, is never carried out with precision. Lack of precision leaves precious details undone. Lack of precision opens doors for people's feelings to get hurt. If we're not careful, if we don't plan things out, if we don't operate according to the plan, what's the saying? Plan the work, work the plan. It's easy. That just sounds too easy, doesn't it? But it is that easy. Plan what you're going to do and then do what you planned. Along the way, you may have to get flexible. You may have to adjust a little bit. But if there comes a time to butt ahead, you could just say, you know what, we're going to revert to the plan. I'm sorry you don't agree. And you got something to blame besides just being mean to someone. Lack of precision also leaves an opportunity to bring to sort of deface the church or the good name of God. If we're operating as God's people, supposedly doing God's work, and we fail to plan, which leads to lack of precision, we bring a bad testimony, a poor testimony upon God. But we see Nehemiah had no problem with that. He was a planner. He planned things out. We saw this morning that he had a burden. Call that his vision. Tonight we read very clearly that he had a plan. He planned things out. Let's look closely at his plan. By the time Nehemiah approached the king, we read that just now, It was time for the king to drink his wine, and Nehemiah was going to bring him his wine. He was the cupbearer, and he's sad. And the king says, "Why are you sad?" By that time, Nehemiah had already figured out how long it would take him to complete the project. We notice later on in the chapter there, in verse number 6, he said, "And I set him a time." That was a soul conversation there. And he was prepared before he ever allowed the king to know that he would ever need anything. He was prepared when he went in that day with a sad face on. I think he did that on purpose. This is a four-month time span. If you notice chapter 1, verse 1, the month they're in there, and then chapter 2, verse 1, the month they're in there, there's a four-month difference there, approximately. My best estimations. 4 months later, he comes to the king with a sad face on, gets the king to ask him what he needs, and by the time that happens, he has his plan. He knows how long it's going to take to complete the project. He knew the name of the person who oversaw the king's forest. Kings are busy men. Nehemiah is just his servant. And it's not even really his king. It's the king of those who had captured them. But he already knew when the king asked, "Well, what would it take?" "Well, I'm going to need a letter to the governors. And I'm going to need a letter from Asaph." He had things in order. He had things laid out just so. Before he excited the people to build, later on as he got to Jerusalem, he surveyed the wall secretly at night. He surveyed the wall to determine exactly what would have to be done. He had gathered enough information about the job that when the people were ready, he was prepared to move the project ahead without wasting time. What would you say is the number one reason you and I fail to plan? I would guess time. And hopefully it's not slothfulness. Hopefully that's not our reason. I would say most of it is time. And just looking around the room here, we're planners. So I'm talking about everybody else in the world except those who are at church tonight. Is that all right? Why do they all fail to plan? I think a lot of times we fail to just take the time to do it. We don't want to wait 4 months. I'm sad now. I'm down in the dumps now, today. In this month, I want to do something about it now. I'm going to go to the king right now, Nehemiah chapter number 1, right after I've heard the bad news. I'm going to get him to help me do something about it. He would tell you no. And he would get someone else to be his cupbearer so he didn't have to deal with you anymore. And you'd just be in a prison somewhere probably. Not an influential position that you are as Nehemiah here. We fail to plan because we fail to take the time to do it. Many times in a rush to act swiftly upon our burden or vision, we fail to take time to plan. That brings us to notice Nehemiah's second action was his process. It's one thing to have a plan, but it's another to have a plan for your plan. How do you like that? But I use the word process there instead of plan twice. Because if you know anything about alliterating sermons, you can't use the same word twice even though it's alliterated. Both P words, right? Both PL words. But that doesn't work. Process. Think of timing. 4 months he spent planning. His process was to provide adequate and accurate timing to each step of the plan. He didn't rush into action. He planned. He didn't rush to begin the plan once it was set. He allowed things to happen in their time. He never went to the king. Did you notice that? The king came to him. And all Nehemiah had to say at that point, well, since you ask, I wasn't going to mention it, but you asked me. You see his process there? He's a wise guy. I like Nehemiah. That didn't sound right. Well, I just called him a wise guy there. He wasn't a wise guy. He was a very wise person. How's that? That's better. He didn't rush into action. He planned. Nehemiah was a master of timing. He waited until the appropriate time to show his sadness to the king. We've said this. He was sad 4 months ago in chapter number 1. The king didn't notice until here in chapter 2 as he was ready to enact his plan. Taking us back to this morning's sermon, he had to put on a smiley face sometime during that 4 months, I'm sure, around the king to hide his true feelings. But in his private time, he still was going through grief. That's important for us to know. Nehemiah didn't want the ball to get rolling until he had gathered the information he needed. He didn't mention the walls until well into his conversation with the king. What did Nehemiah want to go to Jerusalem to do? Rebuild the walls. What did he tell the king from the get-go that he wanted to do? This may seem manipulative, but it's actually kind of wise. It's a good process. He got the king in tune to going and seeing before he mentioned the rebuilding. Let's look at it. Look at chapter number 2 here. The king asked him in verse number 2, why is he sad? You're not sick, so why are you sad? Verse number 3, he says, let the king live forever. The place of my father's sepulchres lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire. He tells, later he'll tell the king. He'll say, well, I'd like to also rebuild the walls. But he begins by telling the king that, well, the graveyard that my dad and my ancestors are buried in has been destroyed. The place where their remains are has been marched over and burned. He kept his plans secret until he was ready to promote popular support. Can you imagine as he gets to Jerusalem with letters to the king or letters from the king? And here's this place that's desolate. The walls are destroyed. The people are in a time of depression. They're weary from that. I imagine they're dirty. I don't know why I think they're dirty, but I just imagine that they are. And here he comes with letters from the king, letters to these governors, letters to the man that has the wood, and he's got a captain of or a little small army with him there. We read that in verse number 9. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. If that were me, I would ride into town in parade form. Me and the band of the people that I had with me. Full parade. We're here to help. We're your hero. I'm your redeemer. I'm your kinsman. And we're going to make things better here in this town and in your nation. I would have announced loudly and proudly that we came to rebuild and start over. But Nehemiah realized it wasn't time for this. First he came in and he was just sort of there. I think he was there for 3 days before he announced to him his intentions. And he didn't survey the walls in broad daylight. He went at night and looked when nobody could know what he was up to. What he had worked on for months was going to take time to settle in the hearts of these people who would just be hearing. You ever work something up, and maybe to your spouse or to someone you work with or some group of people that you deal with, You've worked on it for months, and then you're excited to finally release it to them and tell them about it, and they don't really like it right from the get-go, but you've learned to love it over the time that you've been working on it, and it's very discouraging, isn't it? I'll get a plan, and I'll tell Shanae about it, and it takes her a little while to warm up to it, and it's just, oh, man, you need to be as excited as I am right now, because I'm very excited about this, and I've worked out all the kinks, but she still has her questions. Don't ask any questions. I've worked out all the bugs. And every question you ask, I've got the right answer for it, but we're just wasting time. We need to go buy it now. Nehemiah knew that it would take time for these people to settle in on him first. Well, he's the new guy in town. You don't come into town as the new guy and say, well, we're changing it all. We're doing it different. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. They didn't want to build walls. They were in a depression. There was no money to build walls. There were no materials to build walls. We don't have enough food to keep energy to build the walls. If we build them, they're just going to tear them down again. You can understand the mentality there, and that's why his process was so important. He had a good plan, but he had to wait on the right timing. You and I must also consider the matter of timing and process. Just because God wants something done doesn't mean that we should start it right now. Often, God asks for us to wait for his right time. That's very important. Nehemiah has decided to go and to see. He plans. He wisely sticks to his process. And then the last thing we see tonight is his persuasion. Nehemiah was a master of effective communication. And that's very key here. He had to deal with a king. He had to deal with a bunch of people who were in a bad place. He had to lead the group on his march there. He had to deal with governors as he crossed over different lines of, the Bible just says the other side of the river. He had to be a good talker. He had to talk to these people in a nice way. Just because we have a desire to go and see after we've prayed doesn't mean that everybody's going to be on board. We may have the workings of a very good plan, in our opinion. But someone else may think it's a very bad plan. Then we read about that. He came across some people who said, you guys can't do this. You have no way. Of course, he told them in the end that you have no right. We may not have a good way, but you don't have any right to tell us that we don't. I like that. That's how it is when you're serving God, isn't it? It's wonderful. We have our process set, and we're willing to be patient with the timing, but sometimes others may not be so willing to be patient with the timing. That's where effective communication skills or persuasion came into play for Nehemiah. He spoke to the king not only with due respect, but with an awareness of the king's own values. We saw how he first addressed the king. He said, "Let the king live forever." Now, everyone likes to hear a compliment, don't they? Everyone especially likes to hear when it has to do with the length of their life. I like for my doctor to come in and say, "You're very healthy. You're going to live 10 years longer than you thought you were." I like to hear that. I can imagine if I were in a political situation, a political leader of some sort, and someone says to me, "Long live the king," I'm for that. I mean, that I imagine that tickled Nehemiah, or the king's ears, when Nehemiah said that. Next, he mentions the part of the plan that the king would be sympathetic towards. The king would not immediately grant him to go and rebuild the walls. You know what people did if they wanted to revolt? If their land had been conquered and their walls had been torn down, you know what the very first thing they would do if they wanted to revolt against those who had conquered them? They would build their wall back, their defense. That's the first thing they'd put back up again. He couldn't go to the king and say, "Yeah, I'm sad because you guys tore down our walls and took us away from where we're supposed to live, and I want to go back over there and rebuild those walls." That would be poor communication skills. Nehemiah had good communication skills, so he started in on the graves. You know, if you think about civilizations, cultures, different religions, different languages, all seem to carry a certain dignity in dealing with the dead and with burials. Now, it's different in different places, I'll admit that. In Georgia, in here, I think it's the same. When you pass a funeral on the side of the road, what do you do? When a funeral's going by you, I mean, what do? You stop. Now, in Lynchburg, I guess they didn't always do that. We would pull over and stop, and people would blow their horn. And here come the funeral procession, and somebody's behind blowing the horn there. Some would stop, but some would not. I guess cultures are different in different places, and I saw in the news where Clarksville's putting in some new laws about that. Have y'all seen this? They're trying to get a law passed, or they did get a law passed, that you can have a funeral procession through the town, but you can only have like 3 cars. That's it. You know, the hearse and the funeral home cars and 3 of your family cars, and that's the end of it. That's your funeral procession. I don't know. I guess they're too busy to stop for people to die in Clarksville. If we ever get to where we're growing and buzzing so much that we can't afford for people to die, well, then we've just got too much going on. Am I right? But no matter what culture you're in, death is... Because I don't care what language you speak, where you live, what color your skin is, we all die. We all die the same way. And we all grieve death. We all grieve death. Nehemiah started with that. King in another country that maybe didn't understand what he wanted to do or what his intentions were. He couldn't say, "Let me go and rebuild the walls," but he could say, "My ancestors' graves have been torn down, torn up, burned," whatever the situation was there. And that's exactly what he did. "King, could I go and see the state of my father's graves? I've heard they're destroyed." With his careful choice of words, he gradually moved the king along and his support. You know, when I want a new car, I decide it's time for a new car. I just pick a car. It could be anything. I don't go right to my wife and say, "That's it, we're getting a new car." No. Tell her how bad the old one is first. Right? Isn't that right? Isn't that what you do? I read a story of a father and a daughter. And this is not a good illustration coming from me, but it is a good illustration because I only have sons. But the daughter goes to dad and says, "Dad, can I go get a new skirt?" And he said, "Well, of course. Here's some money. You can go get a new skirt." "Well, hey, you know what, Dad? While I'm getting a new skirt, I probably better get a new blouse that's going to match it." Right? So in the end, he's bought everything. He's bought earrings and a blouse and a skirt and shoes to match, you know. But you started with just that. The king here is not going to allow him to go rebuild the walls. But being persuasive, Nehemiah says, "Well, if I could just go and check on the graves, well, how long will you be?" And he gave him a set time. "Would you need anything?" "Well, while I'm there..." if you could get the guy in charge of the forest to cut down some trees, we could rebuild the gates for him there. Those people are in a bad way. And we could put the walls back up. Do you know, anybody know how long he stayed there? I believe it was 12 years Nehemiah was there doing the work. I could be wrong on my time there. But I promise you, he didn't tell the king that. I don't think that king would let him go for 12 years. And he probably didn't mean to be gone for 12 years. But has anybody, you ever built anything? We're going to build your new house, sir, in 3 months. And a year and 3 months later, you might have your new house. And that's not a slap on contractors. It's just weather gets in the way. Supplies don't come in. That's just how it happens. I'm sure the king understood. When it was time to persuade these Jews to build, once he got there, again, he shows his ability to motivate people by appealing to their concerns and desires. Verse 17, he says to them, "You see the mess we're in. Our greatest city has become a place of waste." He continues there with, "Let's build so that we can stop being a reproach." Now, the text doesn't give us what he means by reproach here as far as a reproach unto what. You could take it as a reproach unto ourselves, but I think probably because of what he follows up with, that he's saying, so we can stop being a reproach to our God. I think that's very important for us to note. He plays upon their familiar emotions to get them motivated to do what he plans for them to have to do. We can stop being a reproach. And then he goes on to say, God has led me to do this. And furthermore, the king that rules over us right now, even though we don't consider him our king, but he is the king, he backs me in this. And he's given me letters to go ahead and go forward with this. So with that, we read that the people said, "Let us rise up and build." Nehemiah, he had a burden or a vision, whichever you'd prefer it to be. And then he went and saw. In his going and seeing, he planned, he had a process, and then he had persuasion. Those were his three tools that he used to get there. You know, we know this to not be the truth, but it's almost like right here as these people say, yeah, let's rise up and build. And I feel like they got excited. Maybe they did the slow clap. They got faster as they went. You know, have you seen this on movies? And before long, they're all clapping really fast. They may have even done that. That may be where that came from. The book of Nehemiah is where all these ball teams get it from. But I just, in my mind, I know that it's just going to be smooth sailing from here on out or downhill from there. He's been burdened. He's formed a plan. He's gotten there with the king's good wishes. He's waited out the process, the timing on that thing. He's been persuasive. And everybody said yes. It just seems like it's all going great from here, doesn't it? We know that's not the case. But all of it came to be because Nehemiah got a burden, then decided to go and see what he could do. I would close tonight by asking you, what can you do? We said this morning you can pray about it. When you get that bad news, you can cry and mourn and fast and pray. But then after that, when your time of grieving is over, when you've gotten to that place where you're ready to step it up a notch, you're ready to do something new, you're ready to let the sun shine in, then go and see what you can do. Form a plan, then work that plan. While you're working that plan, depend upon a process. Let the timing take care of itself. God will allow us to work the plan and to form the plan, but He kind of wants us to depend upon Him for the timing. The hardest one, you know what the hardest time to figure out is in the will of God? When to start. If you can never get that one right, the rest just sort of seem to fall in place. You got to figure out when to start. And then speak to others persuasively. Be nice. Be caring. They're not on what you are on right now. They're not where you are in life right now. They may be ahead of you. They may be behind you. They may be in a different place entirely. You're going to have to use persuasion to get other people sort of on your bandwagon to do what it is God wants you to do. But don't leave it at chapter 1. Take it on over to chapter 2 and go and see.
Thank you for listening today. If you have questions about this ministry or would like to know more about becoming a Christian, please contact us. We can be reached online at harpethbaptist.org or by phone at 615-378-1136. Harpeth Baptist Church is located just west of Nashville in Kingston Springs, Tennessee, off of Highway 70 on Butterworth Road. Please join us again next week for another Bible sermon from Harpeth Baptist Church.